As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show.
Hey everybody, today my guest is Gerardo Cazares. Gerardo is an Army combat veteran who is now a full-time artist in San Antonio, Texas. After a few setbacks in his transition out of the military, he discovered painting, and he's here today to spread his message of finding a new mission. So welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your time in the Army?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, you almost got it.
I came close. I knew it. As soon as it came out of my mouth, I knew it wasn't perfect. But
that's how pronounces it. I mean, that's how everybody was pronouncing it. All my leadership, all my NCOs, all my commanders, so on and so forth. Everybody I was in the Army and pronounced it exactly that way. So it kind of, it's familiar. But yeah, anyway, so I joined in September of 2008. I was 20 years old. I joined as a 12 Bravo as a combat engineer. So I did OSIT out in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. And after that, I got stationed in Fort Hood, Texas, which is funny because, you know, I joined the Army to travel the world and to go see the world and stuff. And the Army stations me in Fort Hood, Texas, which is about 2.5 hours north of San Antonio, Texas. So I didn't go very far in my first unit, right? That's the Army's sense of humor right there. So yeah, that was really hilarious. I was stationed out there with the 3rd ACR. It's a cab unit. So they put a bunch of combat engineers in a cab unit. That was interesting. That was fun. So I was on a Bradley my first 2 years out there. Did all the Bradley stuff, did the driver's training. I did all the gunnery's training. I went out to gunnery and shot with the Bradleys out at Hood. And I went to NTC with that unit, deployed to, where did we go? We went to Al Kut, Iraq, in August of 2010. We did that for 12 months. We did route clearance out there. We did route clearance along with just, what do you call them? PSD, not PSD. One step below that. We had majors and colonels and, you know, just big wigs riding around with us. And they would want to go talk to the local, like the police forces and the military, you know, and we would basically provide security for them. I forgot what they called this missions. Anyway, we did those. We set up security for those guys along with in between those missions. We did mostly 90% of our missions were route clearance missions. So freedom of maneuver throughout the province and all that kind of stuff. It was kind of interesting. I guess there was a couple of things that happened in Iraq that were, I don't know, like it was it disrupted the monotony of the deployment. And then so I was gonna get out right after I got back from Iraq. And then I said, you know, our first sergeant, my reenlistment window, along with a bunch of other guys in my unit, their reenlistment window was coming up. So our first sergeant held a formation for us, like a little informal kind of like a huddle thing for me and some of the other guys that were about to get out. And he said, you know, guys, you know, reenlistment's not that bad. You know, the Army's not that bad. Don't let your first, if you're getting out because your first unit's shitty, don't let that, you know, contaminate your idea of what the Army is and da, 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 so on and so forth. And he said, you know, I was going to get out after my 4 years and I ended up staying in, and it's 20 years for me now. So like, it's an, just think about that, guys. And that, it got me thinking, and I said, you know what, I think I'm going to reenlist. So I reenlisted while I was in Iraq, you know, so we had the career counselor out there doing his thing. And I signed up for, I wanted to sign up for Germany. I said, hey, if you can get me an assignment to Germany, because I hear all kinds of awesome shit about that place. I said, I'll do it. And he said, okay, cool. Let me see what I can get you. And yeah, sure as shit. I think about a week later, he called me back in his office and he said, yeah, I'll get you out for Vilseck, Germany. It's by Grafenwehr. It's this unit, so-and-so, and sign right here. Boom. So I reenlisted in Iraq. After we got back from that deployment, I PCS'd out there to Vilseck, Germany. It's, I don't know, Southeast Germany. It's in Bavaria. It's like, it's near Grafenwehr, the GTA. And that's like, I don't know, 2 hours from the Czech border, I guess. And, yeah, it was awesome. It was another cab unit, 2CR. This time it was Strikers. It wasn't Bradley's anymore. It was Strikers. And, same thing again, driver, gunner, dismount, the whole thing. It was really cold out there and did a lot of training, 45-day training rotations in Hohensfeld and the GTA. Deployed with that unit out to Kandahar, Afghanistan in 2013, and we did 9 months out there. So we actually came back in March of 2014 back to Graf. And then I got out, and then I PCS 9 months later after that, after we, yeah, 9 months after Afghanistan. So it was like November 2014. As I came back to San Antonio, I came back home on terminal leave. And that was a new beginning, a new chapter in my life.
Yeah. And so how did that transition go for you? Were there any setbacks that you encountered after getting out of the military, or what was that all like when you got out?
Oh gosh, it was rough, man. I didn't expect, I had heard horror stories. I had heard stories about guys struggling when they got out, and I didn't understand it, right? I didn't understand. I was like, wow, what's so bad about it? You know, what's so bad about civilian life? You don't have to put up with all this anymore, right? So that was my mentality, right? And I think what it was a combination of things, a comedy of errors. I didn't use my time in the military to set myself up for success for the civilian world. Okay, I thought I had a piss poor plan. My plan was to get out, go back to school, you know, move in with this significant other that I had at the time, and figure it out from there. And life's gonna be just dandy, right? Hell no, absolutely not. That's the opposite happened of what, I mean, it was, everything went wrong. As soon as I got home, everything just started going wrong. Everything just started declining and just like falling apart and falling apart and falling apart slowly. I mean, I was a wreck, man. I was drinking a lot. I was drinking myself to sleep. I was having nightmares and it was ridiculous. I was driving everybody away, kind of separating myself from everybody. I didn't feel comfortable out in public. I didn't feel comfortable interacting with my own family at family gatherings and stuff like that. I just felt really disconnected, feel really separated from the whole world, from everybody. And I just kind of imploded and shit went wrong, man. Then one thing after another. I wasn't doing too well in school. Oh yeah, I went back to school, right? So I started using my GI Bill. So I kind of felt like Billy Madison in those classes, right? You know, everybody else is 12 years old and I'm here, you know, like I look like a 45 year old in class with these kids. Right. So what else? Oh yeah. So we ended up, that relationship kind of fell apart and I got kicked out of that apartment. And then I moved out into another apartment, with a friend of mine. And that, I think things got worse after that breakup. I didn't really deal with it. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my family. I didn't tell a lot of friends that I had at the time. I didn't deal with it. I just kept on doing the same thing. I just kept on with the drinking and with the self-destructive patterns and the self-destructive behavior. And I just didn't really know what else to do because I was out of my comfort zone. I was out of my shell because I was in a certain culture, in the certain world, in this universe for longed for a while, for 6 years of my adult life. It was just active duty, full, you know, doing active duty stuff as a single soldier, you know what I mean? And then I'm back here. Now you kind of have to grow up and be an adult and do all that kind of normal stuff. And it was difficult. It was difficult because you don't have your chain of command anymore. You don't have your NCO support channel anymore. You don't have your squad leader or your first sergeant or your sergeant major to go ask for, hey, what do we do now? Like, hey, I don't have any idea what to do. Can you give me some guidance here? Like, what am I supposed to do? There's none of that. You're just supposed to figure it out all on your own. So I wasn't used to that. It wasn't working for me. So anyway, long story short, I mean, I can go on forever and ever, but long story short, I mean, I was pretty much at the end of my rope. I mean, I was in a deep dark hole. I really was. You know, I was contemplating, before I got out of the Army, I'll put it this way. Before I got out of the Army, I was still on active duty and I was hearing about all this epidemic going on in the outside world about veteran suicide, right? And I didn't understand it. I was like, what the hell is going on with these guys out there? Like, what is so bad about, you know, the outside world? What are these guys facing, or what are they doing? What am I thinking? And then I found myself in a position where I completely understood. I said, man, I get it now. This is horrible. You know, I was at a point where I didn't really want to wake up in the morning anymore. I wanted to fall asleep and I didn't want to wake up anymore. And I was thinking about different ways to do it and different ways to just kind of get out of here already. And I said, you know, I've always wanted to try painting a picture and just trying my skills about that, because my entire life I've drawn. I've had a sketchbook with me and I've done my little doodles and everything like that. And I was the designated graphic designer throughout the Army, right? So I did platoon t-shirts and company logos, and I did a couple of T-walls out there in Afghanistan. I did T-walls, in Iraq and stuff. So I was that guy. I was the graphic designer, the artist of all my units, right?
Right.
It was always a hobby, never took it seriously. I just kind of, you know, I got my sketchbook, it's cool, whatever. I don't really, not thinking about being an artist for my career, for my life, right? So fast forward again to 2015. This is 2015 now. And I say, you know what? I'm going to try it, you know, because I got nothing left. I have no other plan. I got nothing left that I really feel happy about, that I'm passionate for, and I'm completely miserable. So I don't know. It's worth a shot. I got nothing to lose, right?
Yep.
So I went over to, I think it was like Michael's and Hobby Lobby and Walmart and stuff like that. And I bought a bunch of cheap supplies, right? And canvases and brushes and paints and stuff like that for a budget. I think my budget was like $40, right? And I bought just like real simple stuff, you know, just to kind of get me started. And I took it home, went to my apartment, and I started sketching stuff out and drawing just randomness out on these canvases. And I started to feel a little bit better, starting to feel something, right? Some kind of a right. Positive emotion, like a little light, a little spark kind of turned on in my brain, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, let me keep doing this. Let me keep trying it. Let me try another one. Let me do another one. Okay, cool. So I would draw a Kevlar. Okay, that looks kind of cool. All right, cool. Put that one away. Let me do something else. Let me draw an M4 with some magazine pouches and right next to it, or a battle rattle or something, right? Because, you know, that's all I was thinking about for 6 years, right?
Yeah.
So I get done with these little sketches and these little quick random drawings and stuff. And man, I start to feel pretty good. Starts to feel good. Pretty bad. Oh, holy shit. They look pretty cool, right? So before you know it, I had like 30 of these damn things next to each other. And so I had a bunch of them next to each other, lying next to each other. And my friend would walk in, my roommate, she would walk in every now and then and be like, man, those are really good. You just did those. You just knocked those out. And I go, yeah, you know, I'm just kind of, I'm bullshitting here in my room. I'm not doing, this is nothing. Don't think anything of this. And she goes, man, dude, you really ought to like enter those into shows and start selling those. And people really like that kind of stuff. I said, all right. I was very skeptical, you know, again, not doing it for profit, not doing it for money. I just kind of I'm just kind of winging this kind of stuff, right? So I know nothing about selling paintings. I know nothing about making money off of art. I know nothing about that stuff. I was just painting just to paint. And so that's how it started. It started with just the few people around me that I had at that time encouraging me. They were noticing it. They were taking notice that I was doing this new thing. They really enjoyed it more than I even did, more than I enjoyed it. They cared about it more than I cared about it because I didn't care about it at all at that time. And I was encouraged by many people to just enter these shows and enter these little small, you know, we have a thing called First Friday and then there's Second Saturday tier two on Alamo Street. And there's just a bunch of artisans kind of lined up with their tables and they're selling you their handmade stuff and handmade paintings and things like that. So I started doing those little shows and very skeptical about the first couple ones. I said, man, nobody's going to like any of this shit. Nobody even knows what any of this stuff is. Nobody's going to care, right? I was very negative. I had a very negative mindset about it, right? Negative mentality towards it. So I get out there for shits and giggles. I get out there. I set up my table. I got my paintings out there. And what do you know, man? People come up and they start asking me, oh man, what is that? Like, how much is this stuff? Or dude, that's badass. Like, fuck, that's awesome. How much are you charging for that? And you know, at the time it's like, I don't know, 20 bucks, 30 bucks, man, just give me whatever you want, man. I don't really know how to price this shit. I have no idea what I'm doing. So people started buying that stuff. First show, second show, third show ever that I'm ever doing. People are buying it. People are digging it and buying it. And that's a huge confidence booster for me. That's the first time I really felt like I was accomplishing something or that I was fulfilling some kind of higher purpose for myself. Right. I hadn't felt like that in a long time. And so I was hooked. I was obsessed. I said, okay, what am I going to paint next? What am I going to paint next? And the next, and the next, and the next one. So, and then every time I painted something, I wanted to get better. I wanted to just build that skill and get better and better and better and better. And I did. And so I started doing live art and I started painting in front of people, you know, live at bars and stuff, you know, bars, concerts, weekend events, gun shows. The Saxon gun shows were really like, they were awesome. Those were fantastic. That's a good crowd out there. I really like the gun show.
Nice. People. Okay.
So, yeah. And basically, and then I started doing murals not too long ago, maybe about 2 years ago, I really started getting on the mural game. And I'm up to a point now where I've been doing it for about 6 years now. How long has it been? Yeah, about 6 years now. And now I'm doing a lot of work from home, a lot of commissioned pieces from home. And then every now and then I get summoned by some company or some kind of nonprofit organization to do a mural or something like that on a wall. So it's grown into a full-time job and it's not very lucrative, but I'm making money. I'm paying my bills and I'm making a living out of it. And I am a lot further along now than I ever would have imagined back in 2014 or 2015 when I barely got out of the army. I mean, I wasn't, you know,
right.
I didn't plan for this at all. It just kind of, my life just kind of went in that direction after.
Yeah, and it's interesting how your life just kind of follows a certain path. It like you weren't expecting this and it was just something that you tried on a whim and then here you are all these years later and you know you're doing pretty well, you know, you're selling the art and it's changed your perspective on life and things too, you know.
Oh my God. I don't know if you've done 25 hour podcasts or 25 hour interviews or anything like that, but I could probably talk to you about 25, 30 hours about all the lessons learned and all the attitude changes and changes in perspective and changes in the way I talk and my demeanor, the way I present myself to the world, all that kind of stuff. It's all lessons that I've learned along the way in these last 6 years, just on my own, just from experience, just from getting out, take yourself outside of this little box. Your bedroom is your box, right? That you kind of hide in away from the world. You need to get out of that thing. You need to go down to these damn shows and present your work or present yourself to the world out there. You know, you never know what you're going to get into. And man, it's just, it's a lot of that. It's a lot of, I have changed a lot personally inside, mentally too, just from the last 6 years, just from doing that. It's basically, I have been humbled a lot. I've been humbled a lot. I've learned humility. I've learned how to really accept my mistakes, learn from my mistakes. And, failure sucks, right? Failure sucks. Yeah. It feels terrible to fail, but you know, when you fail really bad and make a really huge mistake, hey, that's a really good opportunity to learn. And when I didn't really have anybody telling me that, I didn't have anybody coaching me, or I didn't read anything to say that to me. I just had to experience that myself. I just had to experience these like really horrific failures and these like devastating setbacks, you know, these devastating, what am I going to do now? Like, now what do I do now? Like, that panic sets in, like, oh shit. But, you know, you kind of just, you know, you learn how to just roll with it, I guess.
Yeah. I look at failures, like what you're talking about here. I look at failures, like, you know, think about when you're a kid, right? Mm-hmm. And you're learning to tie your shoes or ride a bike or any of the things that we take for granted, you know, now that we're older. Right. But at one point those things kicked your ass. Like those were not easy things to do for like a little kid, you know? And, And then you struggled through it and you did it and you're proud of yourself after you did it. Like I remember my son, when he first started riding a bike with no training wheels, he was screaming his head off. He was so excited. He was so happy. Right. But the amount of times that he fell off that bike before he got there was, it was crazy. You know, knees were all skinned up, his elbows, all that kind of shit. But he did it and he was so happy. He didn't care about all that the failures that he had before that. And, you know, I know it's not, you know, apples and apples that we're comparing here, you know, with what you're talking about, but it's a, you know, similar idea where, you know, you have these setbacks. And once when you figure out your way to overcome those setbacks, it sort of, you sort of just like, okay, whatever, forget about the failures.
Yeah.
We got here. We accomplished this.
You start to spend less time being pissed off about that stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Because when you're not used to it yet, when you're not used to blowing $500 on marketing that just doesn't work, right? Something like that. T-shirts. I've gotten like t-shirts printed, right? I've spent like $300 getting t-shirts printed. They don't sell. Now you got to eat it. Stuff like that. Just shit like that, where you're just like, whoa, man, I'm pissed off. I lost all this money. Like, what do I do now? You know? And like I said, that anger and that panic and that just like that frustration, you just want to like, oh man, like, but then the more that happens, the more you get used to it. And you're just like, you know what? Screw it, man. You learn how to learn from it rather than be pissed off about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You can't really do much about it. It's already happened. You already did it. It's already done.
Yeah.
It's useless to be angry about it. Just, hey, learn from it. It sucks. It feels terrible right now, but just learn from it. Turn it into something good, right? That's all you can do. Learn from it, turn it into something positive, and just take it with you for the future. Just that's it.
I love that, turning that and trying to find the good even in a bad situation.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of times vets get hung up on the negatives. You know, they have trouble finding the positives in a situation, even in shitty situations, right? Let's maybe take a step back. So let's talk about, we talked a little bit about your journey there to find your way into this artwork and how all of that has helped you. Yeah. Let's talk about how other people, you know, who might not necessarily be, you know, an artist, you know, they may not have the artistic bone in them, but how do they find a way to, let's just say, you know, repurpose themselves after they get out of the military, you know, to find that new meaning, you know?
Well, that's just it. I think I've had a lot of time to think about it. And what you just said, you just used a word that I was going to use. You have to find a way to repurpose yourself. I don't want to compare a human being to like maybe an inanimate object. I'll just compare myself. I'll use myself for example. Okay, so let's say you ever go to a garage sale or something like that, and you find an old table or an old cabinet that looks really, really cool, but it's old, it's kind of crusty, needs a lot of work, and you need to retouch it and refurbish it. Or maybe you want to repurpose an old ammo can, an old rusty ammo can that is no longer serviceable. You can't put 50 cal ammo in there anymore. It's going to, you know, fall apart. So do something else with it. It's still useful, but not useful for the thing that it was meant to do. So, okay. So like military, all right. Military personnel, think of an infantry Marine or an infantry army guy, right? What are you trained to do? You're trained to go to combat and survive in combat, find the enemy, neutralize the enemy, and accomplish your missions, right? In downrange, in a combat situation, that's what you're trained to do. Yep. Now you're back in the civilian world. Is that going on? Are you doing that? Are you finding an enemy? Are you attacking objectives? Are you surviving in a combat system? No, you're not doing that. It's a civilian world. You're working at a normal civilian job. So a lot of vets, a lot of guys, especially myself, with myself as for example, you feel like you don't have that use anymore. Like you're of no longer any use to society. You don't have a purpose anymore. You feel very lost, right? Without guidance, no direction. So for me, it was a sort of, you have to repurpose yourself. Yeah. You're still a warrior at heart. You're always going to be that, but the mission has changed. Okay. The mission has changed. You're in a new theater. And the mission is a new mission. Okay. You're not out in Afghanistan looking for the Taliban in the mountains anymore. You're not in Iraq in an urban landscape trying to go door to door, you know what I mean? Clearing rooms anymore. That's not what you're doing anymore. You're in the civilian world now. Your mission is to one, assimilate, kind of culturally assimilate back into the civilian life, which is hard as hell. There's a lot of barriers to that. But then overall, you know, you can still have that warrior mindset or that soldier mindset that says, you know, I need to have a mission to accomplish. I need to dedicate myself to that mission so that I can do my best to charge towards it and accomplish it and do my best at doing that. And part of it is kind of asking yourself, like a self-assessment, I guess. What is it that makes you happy? What is that thing that really no one has to pay you for it? I think that was a question that I had for a buddy of mine a while back. He said, you know, like, how did you know that the whole art thing is your, how did you know that? How can you pinpoint that? Other people don't have any idea what they want to do with their lives. And I said, you know, for me, it was painting. For other people, it's music. For other people, it's metal artwork or woodworking or whatever, right? And I said, I think it's something that you have to be willing to do, and you're not going to get paid for it, and you're not ever going to get any credit for it or any recognition or nothing. You're going to get nothing for it except that feeling of happiness and fulfillment and purpose. What is that thing? Ask yourself, what is that thing that I guess what I'm trying to say is it's a passion. Okay. What are you passionate about? What would you do even if you never got credit for it and never got paid to do something? Just do it for the sake of doing it, because you love it and you enjoy the hell out of doing it, you know? And for me, it's the art thing. And
And I think you hit on a good point. It doesn't have to be, you know, painting necessarily. It could be other forms of expressing yourself. You know, there's, like you said, woodwork or metal art, or even pottery and other things like that. You know, even writing a book or poetry or something like that. I mean, all those things are different ways that you can express yourself. And you know, like I think anyone who knows, you know, anything about art, you're not necessarily going to sell every single thing that you put out there. You know what I mean? And
I know what you mean.
So, you know, it's exactly that. It has to be something that you just enjoy doing. And so I think it's worth, just like we were talking about failure before, it's worth trying things, seeing whether or not this works, you know. And if it doesn't work, so what? You spent a little bit of money on some beginner paint set or whatever, you know, at Michael's or Walmart or whatever, and you ended up not liking it. Okay, so what? Move on, find something else, you know, try that next thing. Right.
I think a lot of it, what had to contribute to that was I was in a really bad spot mentally, you know, spiritually, yeah, emotionally at that time. And I was at a point where I just didn't have any walls up. I didn't have any barriers up anymore. I just said, you know, I got nothing to lose. Before that, I had sort of a barrier up, right? And I had, like I said, I was sort of disconnecting. I was sort of guarding myself off from things, yeah, from the world, from people, from everything, right? And then that helped me out a lot to try something new, was to just, hey man, like, put those barriers down, put those walls down, all that guard, just let it down and just kind of let yourself be vulnerable. That way you can kind of absorb new information and let some of that new knowledge and experience into your mind, into your soul, or whatever, however you want to say it. But
yeah,
that's how I look at it. And I think for people to understand, when you want to try something new, or when you want to gain some new knowledge or new experience, like, I guess, is that a picture of some jujitsu back there or something on your wall? I'm going to use jujitsu for example, right? Because a lot of guys are into like MMA and jujitsu.
Yeah, sure.
Like that, right? I'll use that for example. Say you always want to try it, right? You're in your 30s and you're just like, man, I've never gotten into it. I want to get into it. One thing you have to remember is you can't really expect instant results, right?
Right.
You're going to suck at it in the beginning a lot. You're going to suck horribly at it. You're not going to be freaking Gracie. What's his name? Grayson Gracie the first time. You know what I mean? The first time you tried jiu-jitsu, it's not going to happen, dude. It's going to take a while for you to develop that skill and for you to get good at it and stuff like that. But let yourself be sort of unguarded and a little bit vulnerable. That way you can kind of absorb what people are telling you, some knowledge, some experience. Listen to somebody who's been doing it for 15 years or 20 years. Listen to that guy that's only been doing it for 3 more years. Yeah, 3 years. And he's still, you know, he's still building his skill, but he has a little bit more experience than you. So listen to him. You might learn a little bit here and there from all these people, you know what I mean? And a bunch of different sources. So you got to open yourself up to that kind of stuff. And, you know, always remember that. Just, that's how it is. You're building yourself up to something. It's like getting abs too. It's like losing weight and getting cut and getting all that and getting ripped and shit. That's not an instant thing. That doesn't take 2 weeks. That takes a year, 2 years to get to a level to where you're freaking cut and you got like that six pack that you really want. Don't expect that shit to happen overnight, man. It's going to take a while. So be willing to work for it. Be willing to put that time and the commitment into it, you know?
And if you haven't done any sort of exercise at all since getting out of the military, and it's been, you know, 10 or 15 years since you've been in the military, it may even take a little bit longer than that. You know,
You
might have some serious catching up to do to get to that point. But there's going to be some work there. But, you know, the effort that you put in, it'll pay off. You know, when you start seeing those results, you're going to look at it and you're going to forget all those early mornings that you got up to go exercise. And you're going to forget about all the pain. You know, when you first start running after 10 years, you know, you're probably going to be in a world of hurt, but you're going to forget about all that stuff. And you're going to look in the mirror. And you're going to say, damn, I look good. Like I could be proud about this, you know, like I did this. This was my hard work and my dedication to my diet and my exercise and all that shit, you know, and without that, all that hard stuff, you wouldn't be able to enjoy the outcome. So
there you go. So that ties back into the whole arts thing, or learning to play an instrument, or learning something new, basically, whatever that thing is, that's a new skill and some new thing that you want to explore. That's exactly what it is. It's time, it's commitment, and it's discomfort. Overall, it really is. It's discomfort. It's pain. I mean, whether it's physical pain, if it's some guy getting into jujitsu, or if it's like emotional, spiritual pain, like me, you know, like my first few paintings that were dreadful, that looked terrible and looked nothing like I wanted them to look like. And it's very discouraging at first. You're like, shit. But then more time goes by, the consistency, you stay with that routine, you stay with that consistency, you stay with that hard work and those hours and putting that time into it. And you just, the time passes by and you keep on doing it over and over and over and over and over. And then you just get better. You slowly see those results. I mean, I could see something that I've done now, right? August 2021, I can compare it to something August 2018 or 2017 or 2016. And it looks way better. It looks, oh my God, like, right. Tons of difference, tons of difference. So
for sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. So how has getting into the artwork helped you change your mindset and see more of the positive side of things? I mean, we talked a little bit about, you know, how you choose to see the positives in things, but, you know, how has that helped you in getting more positive?
All right. So you touched a little bit about, you know, a lot of veterans, they see the negative about they got a very negative, I don't know, attitude or mindset about different things. And I used to be like that. I used to be one of those guys. Everything's negative. Oh, it sucks. Dealing with the VA sucks and civilians suck. They don't understand military people. I can't be myself around civilians, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of negative shit that you can get stuck on all the negative stuff. You can be that kind of person that only focuses on negative shit, and you can be one of those guys that's absolutely freaking miserable, right? If you choose to be, if that's all you choose to look at, and that's all you choose to focus on your mind, you're going to be miserable. You're going to be negative and you're going to be like pissed off all the time, right? Or you can do something else and look a different way and look at things a different way. Hey, look at the positive. Okay.
Yeah.
And the art has really helped me do that a lot. There's a lot of negative things that I can touch on that I can say that frustrate me or that piss me off. But then hold on, let me see. Why am I trying to say this? A lot of the times the negativity derives from stuff that you don't have. Right.
Okay.
I don't have a high enough disability rating, so I'm not getting that much money every month. That sucks. I'm pissed off about that. Nobody understands, you know, nobody understands the issues of a combat veteran out in society. You know, we can't get jobs sometimes because of PTSD and blah, 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 blah. That sucks. It's deriving from something that you don't have and that you have very little control over, right? You have very little control over all that shit. I think the things that you can control and the things that you can kind of influence are the things that are going to make you feel a little bit better. I don't know. Is that making any sense?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Or another way I can say it is, you know, you can focus on what you do have. What do I have? Oh man, I have this skill. I have this skill that's very, I don't know. I want to say it's rare, but I want to say it's unique. It's a unique skill. And I'm fortunate enough to have been able to turn it into something that supports myself and my family. And it helps me and it helps others. Right. So it helps me by letting me express my inner thoughts and all the negative stuff and all the dark feelings and all the dark thoughts that I have. Art allows me to do that in a safe, productive, positive way. Right. Without hurting people, without hurting myself. Right. And it helps other people and me too, because I put my art out into the world. You know, you can see my art on Instagram and stuff like that. And other combat veterans, they'll look at it and they'll see it and say, hey man, I deployed to Iraq in OIF-1, or I deployed to Afghanistan in OEF back in 04 or 2010 or whatever. And they tell me, you know, this is some really good shit, because I can relate to it a lot. And you are telling our story in a very unique and very awesome freaking way. And yep. Some, you know, I've heard, thank you for what you do. Thank you for your gift. I don't know. That really means a lot to me. That I really appreciate that kind of stuff. Other, not just regular civilians, but other combat veterans are actually, you know, telling me this kind of stuff, you know, over messages or whatever. Hey, man, I really like what you do. I like your work. You're expressing it in a way that I can never express it, right? Because, like you said, not everybody's super artistic. Not everybody knows how to communicate their thoughts in a visual way the way I do. And I just kind of, I don't know, man, a lot of guys relate to it. And I feel like since a lot of other guys like me are out there noticing and they're giving a shit, that's awesome, man. I think I'm doing something good here, you know?
No, you are. And I think that's definitely a good thing, because, you know, it lets the story be told in a way that maybe somebody else can't tell it. And sure. And they feel like, you know, okay, someone's out there, they're listening, they're watching this story, and they're seeing how I feel, even though I'm not the one who's necessarily creating this message and this artwork, but they're able to see what I'm feeling by checking out this artwork and seeing, you know, what you've put out there, you know. And so that helps them, almost to give a voice where they feel like maybe they don't have a voice, you know, and that lets them communicate that way too, you know. And given the current situation going on in Afghanistan, and like you said, it's August 2021. Earlier this week, you know, Taliban kind of basically took over the country. Yeah. And I think it's important to kind of highlight that, kind of along the lines of what you were just saying. A lot of vets are feeling a little hopeless, and that the sacrifices of their friends or themselves who were either wounded or killed, things like that, it was all for nothing. And I feel like, going back to what you were just saying, how, you know, you could focus on all that negative and all the bad stuff that's going on now, or you could also just take a look at the stuff that you do have. What were some of the takeaways from Afghanistan that, you know, hopefully will leave us in a better spot? You know, maybe we look at, you know, some of the positives being, you know, the kids who got to go to school while we were there, or the, you know, villages that had running water or electricity, you know, while we were there, you know, those places did improve while we were there, you know, and yes, the situation sucks, but it wasn't all for nothing, you know?
No, I mean, the situation is absolutely terrible right now. It's absolutely atrocious what's going on in Afghanistan right now. But yeah, I do think that there's those people that will always remember that time while we were there, while we were actually doing something and actually helping and actually contributing to the future of their country. And they'll look at it and they'll see us in a positive way. And those young kids or those young adults or whatever, they're going to grow up. They're going to grow up and they're going to have a, they're going to do something. Something good and something positive is going to happen in the future. I still think that there's a lot of, I still think there's hope left in Afghanistan. It's just with guys like the Taliban in charge of an entire country, it's a little bit trickier to express your ideas. You know what I mean?
For sure. I can understand that.
It's not so easy to, you know, go out and organize some kind of protest against a group of individuals like that. You know what I mean? Like we can here in this country, we can go and vote you out of your office or take you out, you know, with our voice, with our First Amendment, with our Constitution, you know what I mean? We have that backing us, but over there, those people don't got anything backing them. And I think, in time, maybe not next month, maybe not next year, maybe not in the next 5 years, but someday it'll be all right again. It just, the situation right now is, there's a lot of feelings going around with myself, yeah, sure. Myself included, and with a lot of the other guys that I was out there with. There's a lot to be said right now. Definitely, yeah. Definitely a lot to be said. And I don't know. I guess if that's, you want to say anything about that. I can say something about that now.
Yeah. I mean, I think we could probably have a whole nother episode just on that topic. And I think we can probably leave it at that. I just want to get back real quick to the artwork. Sure. You've turned this into your career, basically. You know, you're making a living off of selling your artwork. And other people might be out there thinking, like, you know, if I'm going to do this, I want to get that kind of validation too. I want to get that good feeling of someone saying, hey, you know what, this is worth that, you know, something to me. And they're telling them, you know, this is all right. You know, how was it that, I mean, I know you started going to some of the shows, but what have you found that works to kind of get your name out there and your artwork out there to help you in your business?
Okay. That one's a fun one. All right. I think the first and foremost thing that I always do is I stay true to myself. I stay true to what I believe and what I want to do. If I want to paint something, if I have an idea about something that I really want to paint, I don't really listen to what the naysayers have to say, because there's going to there's always going to be critics out there, right? Everybody's a damn art critic. Everybody's a keyboard warrior nowadays, right?
Yeah.
And you might get some shit for something that you paint, right? I don't let that shit affect me. I don't let those people get to me. I mean, if I need to say something through some artwork, I'm going to say it. And of course, you're always going to have naysayers, but honestly, most of the time, the more intense I feel that something is, and the more kind of scared I am about releasing it out into the world, man, those are the paintings that get really good responses. You know,
that's good. So it's take a risk and put it out there. Nice. Yeah,
just nice. Just do it. Just do it. Do what you want to do. Don't listen to all these negative people out there talking all this smack over the internet, or just people telling me, oh, are you sure you want to do something like that? Are you sure you want to paint this kind of stuff? I mean, this is kind of dark, or this is kind of weird, or this is kind of creepy over here. Like, yeah, I'm going to do it. This is my artwork. This is me. I'm presenting this to the world, and I'm going to do it anyway. I don't really care what people say.
Well, that's good.
That's number one for me right there, man. Don't listen to anybody. Just do it.
Just do it. Okay. Yeah. Put it out there.
Just do it, man. And then the second part is, I mean, God, if anybody's trying to, I guess, start a business with it or go full time, right? Is that what you're saying? Like,
whether it's full time or if it's, you know, even just, you know,
or
trying to get something. Or, okay. Yeah.
Give yourself a little bit of patience, man. Give it some patience. Don't get frustrated with it. Some people, I've tried to teach some people how to do it, right? Because they are interested in, hey, I want to learn how to paint, right? Okay, cool. You know, come over and I'll teach you how to do some stuff, right? We're there for an hour or two or whatever on a Sunday afternoon. I'll teach them some stuff, and then a month later they'll give up, right? The guy that I showed how to do something. And that has happened repeatedly. Okay. That's happened a few times over the last few years. I'm always saying, okay, man, like, you're not going to be Da Vinci on the first try, dude. I'm sorry. I'm still not Da Vinci. I'm never going to be Da Vinci, you know, or Caravaggio. Caravaggio is my favorite painter of all time. And I will spend my entire life trying to paint like Caravaggio. And it's probably never going to happen. That guy was a freaking prodigy. That guy was a master, right? So the point is, you're always going to be learning. You're not going to learn everything on the first thing. And 2 hours on a Sunday afternoon with me is not going to teach you everything that you need to know about painting. But if you are trying to take it seriously and start something with it, and maybe go full time someday with it, give yourself a little bit of patience. Give yourself some time to really hone in on that craft and to learn all the little techniques that you got to learn, and to learn what works for you, because what works for me, the techniques and the the strategies that work for me may not work for everybody else, may not work for you. If you ever tried to do it, you might, you like different brushes, you like different paint. Everybody's got their own comfort zones when it comes to that. So first you got to learn the fundamentals. And then after you learn the fundamentals, then you can kind of break off and, you know, sort of do your own thing or whatever and find your own, sure. find anything that makes you comfortable. So that's not going to happen in 2 hours or two painting sessions or whatever. It's going to take a while, man. So just give yourself some time. And then the other one I would say is learn from your failures, learn from your mistakes. Okay. Don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Those are going to teach you a lot. And then I think lastly, and this is probably the most important one out of everything that I've learned during my journey is no matter what the hell is going on in your life, no matter if your whole life is freaking falling apart and you're just at the end of your pitiful rope already, don't be an asshole to other people. You always want to try to help other people out if you can. If you're in a position to help others out and lend a hand and give a hand up to somebody else, help that person, help other people, because yeah, you might be depressed about, you know, you're having nightmares about combat and all this bullshit and your medication's not working and the VA's fucking with you again. And you're a mess, right? You might just be this depressive black hole of a mess. That doesn't matter because some other person out there is having a worse freaking situation than you. So you need to always remember, just be kind to people and help people out, because honestly, like ever since I started thinking that way and helping other people out and giving my time to others, a lot more good shit has been coming back my way. It's kind of like a karma thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
In. So that's something really good to remember. I mean, that's really changed a lot of, that changed my life for the big time, you know?
Right. Absolutely. And I think that's a great way to kind of wrap all of this up is, you know, what you just said there, you know, helping out others where you can, you know, being kind to others, and looking at the positive sides of things, you know, just to kind of wrap up everything that we were talking about. I mean, you could probably just say that in a nutshell and you know, that plus, you know, learning from your failures is like really
paramount right there. I mean,
all there is to it, you know,
you're going to make a lot of mistakes. You're going to fail. You're going to make a lot. I mean, you're going to feel like a real big idiot and a loser, but yeah, you know, just keep going, learn from it and keep going.
And that's with everything too. I mean, like no matter what you try, if it's something new, that's why in the Army, I don't know other branches, but the Army had the crawl, walk, run phase, you know, where you learn something new. They don't start you off running on something, you know, they start you off crawling and, you know, a crawl phase and then, you know, walk. And then they get you to that run phase where you go through all the steps and practice and practice and practice until you get it right, you know? And if you look at other things in life, you know, it's the same thing, you know, you can't expect yourself to get it right off the bat. So, so really great message there. I really think you had a lot of good stuff there. So, where can people go to get in touch with you, find out more about your artwork and everything that you're up to?
So it's real simple. I've got the Instagram, I've got the Facebook, and then I recently started the Google page, but it's all the same thing. It's Ghost Custom Art for every single one of them. Go to Facebook, go search Ghost Custom Art. That's my business page. If you go to Instagram, search Ghost Custom Art. That's the page. You can see all my paintings. You can see what I'm up to up there. I got the videos. I got the time-lapse videos on, YouTube, the YouTube channel as well, Ghost Custom Art. I've got a few of the time-lapse videos up there of me painting some stuff. So.
Check awesome. And I'll link to all of that in the show notes. So anyone who wants to check out your art, they can go check it out there. And thank you again for joining me today and giving us all this great information. I think it certainly can help a lot of people, you know, certainly help me, you know, talking to you and hearing your perspective and your side of things. So I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people who listen to this episode. So thank you again.
I can only hope so, man. I hope so. Awesome. Thank you very, very much for having me on, man. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah. Anytime. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy, brother.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.